Welcome to The Bridge, a weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgane, your host for the show. The North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, was signed into law 20 years ago this month. In Oregon, one result was the more than doubling of the state's Latino population. Many moved north due to the loss of jobs in Mexico.
For example, the Walmart in Oaxaca City does not make purchases from regional businesses in Oaxaca. They get their stuff from wherever in the world they can get it the cheapest. Clothes from Bangladesh or brooms from China that are going to be sold in Walmart in Oaxaca, well, that puts the local or the regional clothing business and the mills and the broom makers out of business.
Jacob Lewin reports on the lasting effects of NAFTA in Oregon. That story coming up at 9:12. Before that, we'll hear how the city of Astoria will help some low-income residents having trouble paying their water bills. NPR News headlines are next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge on Coast Community Radio. I'm Kathleen Morgane. In top stories this morning, a federal appeals court has ruled that a Eugene police officer who complained about his department's safety standards is not entitled to First Amendment protection of his speech. Former Eugene officer Brian Hagen complained about three incidents in which Eugene police SWAT members accidentally fired their weapons and in two of those incidents shot another officer. Hagen complained numerous times and was transferred as a result. He sued and won a $250,000 judgment in 2012. Jurors agreed the department had retaliated against Hagen, denying him his right to free speech. But the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit this week said Hagen didn't have the right to free speech because he's a public employee whose complaints were part of his job duties and therefore exempt from constitutional protection. The city of Astoria will offer financial aid to water and sewer ratepayers having trouble paying their bills under a program approved this week by the city council. City officials told the council the financial aid will not raise rates for other ratepayers. Councilmember Drew Herzig, who proposed the program in August, suggested applications be made each time a ratepayer has trouble paying a bill.
I would suggest that any application will only apply for the current billing cycle, but individuals can apply as often as they need to. So an application will only be good for one use.
Citing budgetary concerns, Council Member Arlene Lemire recommended limiting the number of times applicants could access the program.
It seems like with our limited funding, with just $10,000, which doesn't go very far when you start paying water bills, I think the applicant should only be able to receive the fund or access that fund twice a year, which the way it was figured out would be 67 households.
Herzig also urged notifying delinquent ratepayers early in the process that assistance is available in order to avoid shutoffs before applications could be approved. He suggested citizens should apply for the program as soon as they receive the green card delinquent notice in order to avoid shutoff. George Sable, executive director of Clatsop Community Action, said his organization would administer the program. To qualify for assistance, applicants will have to demonstrate income below 30% of the average median income in Clatsop County. For example, an individual would need to have a monthly income of $957 or below. The council approved the utility assistance program with a limit of 2 billing cycles per year. Information about the program will be included with the green card delinquent notice. The program will initially be seeded with a $10,000 grant from the city. There are some towns in the Northwest that are so small, nearly everybody is a politician. They serve on the city council, the school board, or the water commission. It's not that they seek the glory. The ones who serve are often those who put up the least resistance when someone taps them on the shoulder. But they do it anyway because of the need to control the community's destiny. Correspondent Chris Lehman visited one of Oregon's smallest towns, Prescott, population 55.
Every morning, Jim Larson takes a walk around town. Down to the railroad tracks, up the hill behind City Hall. There's hardly a sound.
Guess this is pretty typical, pretty quiet around here on a weekday morning.
Yeah, most of the time.
Morning rush hour when everybody heads out to their jobs.
No, because there isn't that many people even at work anymore either. Everybody up this hill that I live on, from my house up, nobody works. They're all retired.
Yep, The Census Bureau shows that just 4 people have jobs in this town, nestled on the banks of the Columbia River, about 40 miles north of Portland. The next stop on our tour is a shed that houses the city's water pump. Anyone can get in if they know how.
I'll just get the key out here.
Larson's no busybody. He's on the Prescott City Council. And one of his duties is to keep an eye on the town's water pipes.
If this system broke down here, I mean, nobody would come and bail you out, right?
No. That's why I started taking care of the water. We had a guy that was doing it. He waited until you turned the faucet on and there was no water, and then you go see what was wrong. No, you got to look at it every day, and then you'd catch it before it goes wrong or before it gets to that point anyway, you know.
This is your own water, too, in addition to
exactly.
Everybody else in town.
Exactly. Yeah.
Even when it flows, water is Prescott's biggest ongoing challenge. The city is having a tough time meeting state standards for water purity. Mayor Lynette Oswald says it doesn't help that not everyone can pay their water bill. And that leads to some awkward conversations in a town where everybody knows everybody else.
The people you know, you feel bad, and they give you their, you know, their hardships, but we also have had people that have threatened our families and not dealt with it in a professional manner. So there's a good and bad to both sides of that when you do know people and they do know where you live.
Another source of tension? The city council asked voters to pass a property tax levy last fall to help pay for an upgraded water system. It passed 22-14. But now that those increased bills are coming due, people are grumbling. Those kinds of challenges aren't unusual for leaders in very small towns like Prescott, says Dee Davis. He's the president of the Center for Rural Strategies in Kentucky.
People feel isolated. They feel like they're in it alone, that their situation is different from other communities. When in reality, there are a lot of small towns who are facing some of the same travails.
Davis says small town elected officials have to quickly learn how to do everything from balancing the books to filling the potholes. And he says that can wear down even the most dedicated public servant.
One of the issues for a lot of towns is just how much effort it takes to keep going.
Okay, our treasurer's report from October. Our general
there are 9 people in the room for the monthly Prescott City Council meeting. That's nearly 1/5 of the town's adults. On the wall is a poster of the Oregon legislature. There are more people serving in the Oregon House than live in the entire city of Prescott. And most of the lawmakers on that poster will face a tougher re-election campaign than Councilmember Jim Larson.
I've been elected 10 times and never been opposed by anybody.
In fact, neither the mayor nor anybody else in the current council faced an opponent the last time they ran. And that's the way it usually is here. Once you agree to serve, you just can't stop. Larson knows that. He's the guy who literally built this city. The city hall, that is.
It started out as a community project. Well, one time he came up here and laid the floor on a weekend, and then that was everybody else just kind of disappeared, and I kept coming over here and working on it.
That was back in 1970. Larson's been doing upkeep on the building ever since, longer than he ever expected. Being mayor isn't something Lynette Oswald expected to do at all when she moved here 7 years ago.
No. Oh, no. Everyone kept asking me, myself or my husband, and my husband said, well, I'm not doing it. So if you want to do it, I'll support you. So I did it, and this is my 3rd year.
Oswald is the mother of the only preschooler in town, but she says she and her husband are in Prescott for the long haul. But with just 2 dozen households and a median income well below the state average, why even keep the town going at all? Why not disincorporate? Jim Larson says Prescott isn't ready to give up.
The county would take over everything we got, our assets. The county would absorb them. That would be the downfall right there. They wouldn't care a hoot about Prescott.
Larson's 75. He doesn't know how much longer he'll be able to serve on the city council or keep an eye on the town's water pump. But he figures as long as people in Prescott want to control their destiny, somebody will step up. I'm Chris Lehman in Prescott, Oregon.
Twenty years ago this month, President Clinton signed the North American Free Trade Agreement into law. Few foresaw that it would change the face of Oregon. KLCC's Jacob Lewin reports from Woodburn.
Downtown Woodburn seems to be in good economic shape.
Anthony Villies, who owns a marketing firm here, shows us around.
All of these businesses here, as we're walking here, are Latino-owned businesses, King's Den Barbershop, and we have these little tienditas, little stores, shops, Zapateria y Joyería. We have a Mexican grocery store. We can go in.
At Lucero's, you can buy fresh herbs, including epazote.
¿Cuánto cuesta?
$1.99. Gracias.
These stores exist in part because of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement that was supposed to eliminate trade barriers between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. While Mexico eliminated subsidies to farmers, the U.S. did not, and starting in 1994, immigration from Mexico to the U.S. accelerated. It's a major reason that the Mid-Willamette Valley is almost one-quarter Latino. It happened to Jaime Arredondo's family. Arredondo is an official with the labor and social services organization PICUN. His grandfather grew corn in Mexico and employed many family members on his farm.
He would use his product to trade to acquire other things like clothing and food and those sorts of things. He wasn't rich, but he just had enough without the temptation or necessity to leave rural Mexico. But that changed after NAFTA.
After NAFTA was signed, we saw a massive exodus of people from Mexico, from the rural parts of the country, coming north to work in agriculture here in the States.
Eric Nicholson, vice president of the United Farm Workers Union, says corn from the U.S. began flooding Mexico. At the same time, the economy in Oregon was booming. Recruiters, some of them staff from Oregon farms, headed south to find workers. Nicholson says at first it didn't cost would-be immigrants much to make the trip north.
In the 90s, early 90s, it was unheard of for someone to pay more than $50 to cross the border. Now those same people are charging thousands of dollars, and we've seen kind of on average about $5,000, as high as $9,000 to come into the States.
Some came to join family members who had been granted amnesty in the late 80s. This new generation of immigrants resulted in a 145% increase in the population of Latinos in Oregon in the 90s to 275,000. And it continued until 2005, when the effects of NAFTA are considered to have ebbed. There are now 500,000 Latinos in Oregon. Carmen Gonzalez has a talk show on a Spanish-speaking radio station in Woodburn.
Ya estamos de regreso en su programa La Hora Campesina.
Gracias a nuestra audiencia, ¿verdad? De estar muy al tanto.
Along with crafts, she and her sisters would make tortillas and chips by hand and sell them at markets. But they couldn't compete with the plastic bags of tortillas made with subsidized U.S. corn that started coming into Mexico.
Un golpe tremendo, porque estamos viviendo de este.
Family members followed one another north.
Como 50. Desde las mujeres que preparamos
50 members of Gonzalez's family came to Oregon, although 15 of them returned. It wasn't all about agriculture. Every major U.S. retailer began setting up shop in Mexico. Lynn Stephen, a University of Oregon anthropology professor, says there was a ripple effect.
For example, the Walmart in Oaxaca City does not make purchases from regional businesses in Oaxaca. They get their stuff from wherever in the world they can get it the cheapest. Clothes from Bangladesh or brooms from China that are going to be sold in Walmart in Oaxaca, well, that puts the local or the regional clothing business and the mills and the broom makers out of business.
Stephen says the Mexican government knew jobs would be lost.
I listened to some very high-level government officials talk about NAFTA, and very deliberately, strategically, with the belief that they would move these farmers out of farming. Immigration was the only job. You know, it was the only sort of outlet.
The idea was that those who lost their jobs would get new manufacturing jobs at the maquiladoras in the north of Mexico, where components would come in tax-free and things like refrigerators or TVs would be assembled. But many of those jobs went to China instead. And the jobless Mexicans went to places like Oregon with a range of impacts. In Jaime Arredondo's case, some of his family is in Mexico, some in Canada, some in Oregon, and some that go back and forth.
It's divided the family. The family unity is sort of destroyed, really.
But in Woodburn, the migration took place as downtown businesses were moving out to the strip near Interstate 5. And storefronts that might have been empty today are filled by the new Latino immigrants. In Woodburn, I'm Jacob Lewin.
Still ahead, with the new year coming in just a few short weeks, many of us are thinking about establishing some new habits.
We need to think about, I want to exercise because it makes me a happier person.
and it makes me a healthier person, and I can spend more time with my family.
We'll hear about Astoria Park and Recreation's new Wellness Challenge and how joining with others can improve your chances for making those resolutions stick. Julia Mabry explains the new program right after this weather break. Here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region. Today, partly sunny with highs 35 to 40, southeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy with a chance of snow early this evening. Snow likely again after midnight, but forecasters say little or snow accumulation. Overnight lows continue well below freezing, 25 to 30, with a chance of precipitation 70%. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a 20% chance of snow in the morning, then decreasing clouds. The highs will stay in the low 30s, with somewhat increased east winds 10 to 15 miles per hour gusting to 25 miles per hour. Gordon McCraw, meteorologist and director of Tillamook Emergency Management. Gordon McCraw, meteorologist and director of Tillamook Emergency Management, says today the models continue to show a low pressure area forming off the coast, then drifting south, pumping moisture into the area this evening. With the cold air in place, there's a chance of snow tonight into tomorrow morning. The current thinking, and the models aren't all in agreement, is that the bulk of the snow will be more to our south, where the low actually moves inland, but this is only a possibility at this time. The cold continues behind the low, so be prepared for icy roads each night and morning through the end of the weekend. In the extended forecast, some of the models are suggesting another low forms, then nears the area Saturday night into Sunday. So if this develops, there's the potential for another brief snow event along the coast overnight. Beyond that, high pressure builds in, so the temperature will finally begin to moderate ahead of the next front, which would bring just rain into the area around Tuesday night into Wednesday of next week. Finally, Astoria Parks and Recreation is gearing up the Wellness Challenge, a group fitness program that will take place over 8 weeks from January 9th to March 6th of next year. Next year will be here in just 27 days, so now is the time to check your schedule and enroll. Julia Mabry is coordinating the challenge. Earlier, she came to the station to explain the benefits of the program.
Hi, good morning to you. I'm here to talk about the Astoria Wellness Challenge, which is a new program we're starting at the Parks Department in Astoria. It's a 9-week program that accompanies our participants in their challenge to lead healthier lives, which is a challenge to a lot of people to make that first step toward having some regular physical activity and decent nutrition. So we're signing up participants.
And this isn't just it's sort of competition based, but kind of not, in that you're doing a health screening before you even get started on this thing, right?
Right. So the participants get a health screening. They get a cholesterol check and a blood glucose check, and their blood pressure tested. This is not to assess whether they're ready for exercise. It's just for them to know where they stand health-wise, because a lot of us don't really know what our blood pressure is, and we don't realize how important that is for overall health as we get older, particularly. Exercise, physical activity, has a lot to do with our health and our blood pressure and our glucose and our cholesterol. So that's part of the challenge. It's just to give people an idea. We will also end the wellness challenge with a health screening to see if any of those numbers have changed throughout the 9 weeks of the wellness challenge.
So 9 weeks, that's a little over a couple months. So mm-hmm. That gives you a chance to see if you're heading down the right path or not.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. And also part of this, you said it's sort of a challenge in that you meet with other people. So how often does the group meet, or is it individual groups?
So the group meets all together every Thursday night at the Astoria Rec Center starting January 9th. And every Thursday they will have, I call it an information session. So that's where we'll all get together and we'll learn something new. For example, we'll learn about some really basic nutrition. We'll even have a cooking class with a dietitian. We'll have a talk on heart health by an exercise physiologist. And we'll learn about goal setting and motivation and all kinds of things like that. And also every Thursday we'll do the challenge part of the program, so the competitive aspect of it, so where people bring in their accomplishments during the week, what they've done, And there'll be two winners every week, and we'll hand out some prizes.
So this is if you've gone an exceptionally long jog, yay. or if you've tried some swimming and you haven't done that in 3 or 4 years, yay.
Basically, yeah. It's the more check marks you can do every week, basically, the healthier you eat, the more time you spend exercising, or the more different new types of exercise you try, the more check marks you get. And then we'll tally them all up, and we'll have some winners.
Oh, that sounds great. Do you have, are there public weigh-ins?
No, there's no weighing. I really believe that the whole idea of weighing yourself to assess your health is heading down the wrong path. Physical activity is of great benefit regardless of what you weigh, and you may start exercising and never lose a pound, and you still gain so much health in spite of that. So I really want to de-emphasize the weight loss part. I know that's a big deal for people. You know, it's like, I want to exercise so I can fit into these pants or I can fit into that dress. And it's a bit short-sighted, because maybe we need to think about, I want to exercise because it makes me a happier person and it makes me a healthier person and I can spend more time with my family. And that's really much more what I would like to emphasize with this program.
Well, part of the exercise component, you mentioned that there's a Thursday, a regular Thursday night session, and then there's a Monday exercise program, and then you have a choice of times for that, right?
Right. So Mondays we will all get together and exercise, work out together, and there'll be many different things to try. And one session will always be early morning for people that have to get to work, so it'll be a 6 o'clock in the morning session, and then there'll be one later in the evening, so just to accommodate people's work schedules. And we'll try a spin class, which is a stationary cycling, then there'll be boot camp, we'll do a guided walk, we'll do all kinds of fun stuff, some Zumba, and so just for people to explore all the different activity options that they have here in town. And the other physical activity options that they will have, they will get a 9-punch pass for the Astoria Rec Center and the Parks Department, so that they can then throughout the week go to some of these classes on their own and either try them again or try them for the first time. And they will also be encouraged to work out on their own, whether it's going for a walk or just taking the stairs or anything that includes moving the body. You don't have to go to a gym to be physically active. And I know a lot of people just don't like that gym feel. There are a lot of other options here. So we'll explore all those. And I just like to mention the partners that have helped us put this together. A great partner in this is Coastal Family Health Center, and they will be doing all the blood work, the cholesterol, and the diabetes screening. And then the Clatsop Community College Nursing Program will do some of the other metrics. They will do the body mass index and blood pressure and that kind of thing. The Astoria Co-op is providing food for our cooking class. Dietitian Grace Lehman is teaching that class, and she's also going to do a class on nutrition. And then exercise physiologist Danny Manning, also from Columbia Memorial Hospital, will be teaching a class on heart health. So I'm really grateful that the community is coming together to help us all be healthier.
On the Monday a.m. or p.m. sessions, will those be in the same place every week or different locations?
They will largely be at the Astoria Rec Center. There will be a couple that will be at different locations just because of equipment and instructors, and they'll all be in Astoria.
So you have a health screening before, a health screening at the conclusion, regular exercise, the nutrition guidance, and group support.
Yes.
That sounds pretty good. Now, there is a cost to this.
Yes. It's the cost for the program is $85. We do have some scholarships available. You'd have to let the Parks Department know that you can't afford the $85 if that's not in your budget. For most people, I think if you prioritize, that is in your budget. And especially if you look at what you get for that $85, it's a pretty darn good deal.
Okay, and if you want to sign up, what do you do?
You have to sign up in person. So which I guess is part of the challenge already. There's no online sign up. You need to actually go to the Astoria Aquatic Center or to the Astoria Rec Center and sign up there.
Okay. And during business hours?
Yeah, the pool is open, I think, from 5 to 8 right now, and 5 in the morning to 8 at night most days. So you should be able to find a time to sign up.
Okay. Well, that sounds really great. Thank you very much, Julia Mabry, for coming in today and telling us about this great new program.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show. The Bridge airs weekly, Thursday mornings at 9. If you joined the show late, you can listen to a podcast of the show from our website at coastradio.org. Just click the program box on the homepage. We welcome your comments on the show. Call us at 503-325-0010 or email to news1. That's N-E-W-S, then the numeral 1, at kmun.org. I'm Kathleen Morgane saying thank you for listening today, and listen in again next Thursday for the next edition of The Bridge. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio. Mm-hmm.